The government is seeking the affirmance of the defendant's conviction and sentence, and I'll confine my remarks to the sentencing issues that my colleague has raised. With regard to the threat of death and the court's application of that enhancement pursuant to 2B3.1, I think the court's remarks are exactly right, that the note that indicates that people will get hurt if the money is not turned over in the context of a bank robbery has no objectively reasonable interpretation other than that someone should be in fear for their life.
But why is that? I mean, there are plenty of cases that say fear of hurt isn't always the same as fear of death. There are all kinds of ways you can hurt people short of killing them.
That's true, Your Honor. But in this case, there's a context for that threat, which is the escalation. And there are a number of cases that talk about the context for the language that's initially used by a bank robber.
But escalation is putting your hands in your pocket?
And he also made oral demands after the tellers hesitated. Mr. Emmett came in, he passed the note, he gestured as though he had a gun in his pocket. And in fact, there are cases indicating that a gesture sufficient to indicate the presence of any weapon in and of itself, I'm talking about the Raskowitz case here, mm-hmm. can be enough to be a threat of death. It needn't be a specific statement that anyone is in peril for their life. But I think in the context of a bank robbery, to pass a note saying that people are going to get hurt, to then make a menacing gesture as though he has a gun in his pocket, and then when the tellers hesitated, and when in the second bank robbery, when Ms. Benkovich died underneath the counter, Mr. Emmett then made an oral demand. In the first case of Ms. Vega, after she inquired, she did not say, "Are you kidding?" She said something like, she froze, and she said, "Are you serious?" And she testified that she was terrified at the time and that she didn't think there was any sort of a joke going on. But in any event, he responded orally and said, you know, "Yes, give it to me or people are going to get hurt." He repeated the threat while making the menacing gesture, which then precipitated her walking away and seeking out her supervisor. In the case of Ms. Benkovich, when she dived beneath the counter, he said, "Give it to me now, lady," again, while making the same gesture. And I think that with that escalation in the context of those menacing gestures, don't hit any alarms or people will start getting hurt hardly has any interpretation that a reasonable teller would make other than that they should be in fear for their lives. And although it is, of course, as the court has noted, an objective standard, I think it is also important to point out that these particular tellers, both of them, subjectively were in fear for their lives. They testified to that at trial. They both had serious problems after the bank robberies and returning to work. Ms. Vega, who was the one who acted with a certain degree more calm and asked if he was serious and approached her supervisor, couldn't return to work right away, had to have her workstation and her parking space changed.
Right, but as you say, that's all subjective. Is there ever a case where you don't seek this enhancement? I mean, I'm just afraid that a bank robber who does anything other than say, you know, "Would you like to give me the money, please," gets the 2B3.1 enhancement.
There are cases, bank robbers who, there are, and I'm sure the court has seen a number of bank robbery cases, they occasionally are committed by rather pathetic individuals, homeless individuals, individuals who are simply at the end of their rope. I know of a case where an elderly woman with a stapler came into a bank and asked for some money, and this enhancement was not applied in that case. I don't think it would be. I can think of lots of hypotheticals where a teller would feel, you know, that she was in a difficult situation and maybe feel sorry for that individual, but not reasonably fear for her life. Sometimes demand notes are not passed, or sometimes they just say, "Give me all the money." I think because this note didn't just say, as the court has pointed out, it didn't just say, "Give me all the 150s and 20s. It said, "Four people will get hurt." That, of course, is a threat, the threat of bodily harm. And when you put it in the context of the ongoing bank robbery and the escalating gestures and words, I think that it is a situation in which any reasonable teller would have both the training and the life experience to think that they may very well be in fear for their lives.
Yeah, my concern is this collapse of fear of harm into fear of death. It seems to me if the Sentencing Commission had wanted this to be a fear of harm enhancement, they easily enough could have said so. And instead, they continue to speak of fear of death, even though there are a variety of ways of proving that.
They do, but I also think there are a variety of kinds of harm. And I think the kind of harm that you are threatened with when a young, large man who's making a gesture as though he has a gun comes into the bank and it speaks to you gruffly, threatens you in two different ways.
Doesn't have to be a large man, though.
It doesn't have to be.
This guy wasn't that large.
He's not a very large man.
5'6" to 5'7" thin.
Both of the tellers were very petite, and they perceived him, as the trial transcript indicates, as large and threatening. His appearance was unusual.
They described him as being 5'6" to 5'7". I mean, I don't know which. If you look at demographics,
he is actually much larger than that. They described him that way, and then they testified. And their testimony is in the trial transcript. He actually is tall, and they misapprehended his actual height in their descriptions. But when they testified at trial, they gave more visual indications of how big he was. And to them, and they're both very petite, he was a large man, and he is in fact tall. I'm not sure of exact height, but I think he's around 6 feet tall. But in any event, I don't think it does make all that much difference. But he's not an elderly person. He's not an infirm person. He's not a child. He's not, a person that another adult might feel they could control, or a person who they might feel would really genuinely be kidding or wouldn't be able to inflict any harm. He is a person who had an unusual appearance, was in fact at the time and acted as though he were strung out to a certain extent, made these menacing gestures, and both tellers subjectively believed they were in serious danger and thought they were going to be shot, and objectively, I think under those circumstances, most tellers would have experienced that in the same way.
I wonder if we could talk a little bit about the attempt enhancement, because it seems to me that that's problematic in that he abandons his effort to rob the banks pretty quickly in both of these instances. He walks up, he gives the note, the tellers respond in a way other than full compliance, and then he walks back out again. Abandonment usually is different from completion completion of all the acts necessary. He didn't even, persist in his request. He didn't go to a different teller. He didn't do all kinds of things he might have done.
He did not do some additional things. There is, by the way, substantial testimony in the record about the physical condition of these banks. I don't believe he could have jumped over either counter. The way they're structured, there's a certain amount of plexiglass. It was not a situation where he could have done that. But setting that aside, I think that he did everything, and again, now we're talking about a subjective standard, and I think Mr. Emmett did everything that he believed was necessary to rob the banks. I think the very best evidence of that is that he went to the second bank, and he did the exact same thing that he did at the first bank. He wrote the same note, he made the same gesture, he made the same demand of the teller. And
why does that tell us anything? I mean, why doesn't that just say he voluntarily withdrew two times in a row?
I think that it indicates to him that in the first bank robbery, he felt he was frustrated by events beyond his control, which he was. He was frustrated by the teller's hesitation, and that is not something that he could control. He couldn't do anything more than he had done. He wrote a note that was an adequate and threatening demand note. He made the gesture. He made the oral demand. He waited for the money, and he was afraid of getting caught. And there are numerous cases about, for example, law enforcement interference frustrating an attempt, not leading to this guideline provision applying. There's another, you mentioned the case about the teller not having keys to a vault. I think that's very comparable to this situation. I think a teller hiding behind a counter and not coming out, well, Mr. Emmett is actually leaning over the counter and further making demands of her. It is clearly something, he was frustrated. He was frustrated by something that was not within his control, which was the teller's, as it turned out, presence of mind. At the time it was raw fear, but she was not going to come up from behind that counter, and there was no way that he could get the money out of her drawer other than having done what he did. He was frustrated again, having tried the same MO twice, and he left. There was another case, the Chapdelaine case, which concerns the armored truck, and in that case, again, everything that the robbers felt that they needed to do in order to get money from the bank, they did. When they arrived, their scheduling was a little bit off, and the armored truck was not there. I suppose, theoretically, they could have waited around for it to come back, but the court didn't say that. It said they did everything they needed to do. Things didn't turn out the way they wanted, so they went away, but that does not entitle them to the adjustment under the guidelines. I think we have the exact same thing here. To say that Mr. Emmett could have, he didn't actually have a weapon that we know of, so to say that he could have done something even more gruff or even more menacing that he had already done, or that he could have stood up on a counter and yelled and brandished or done something else more extreme, isn't any different from saying that in the Chapdelaine case they should have waited around for the next armored truck to pull up
But where is this line then between voluntary withdrawal and completion of enough? I mean, I take it the government at a minimum is not arguing that 2X1.1 doesn't even apply to attempted robbery.
That has not actually been decided in the Seventh Circuit, and I don't think the court needs to reach that issue. There are some courts who say that because attempt is incorporated into the statute itself, it could never apply, and there are other courts that say that you can apply it. I don't think that's a question the court even needs to address, because on the facts, there's no need to consider the enhancement. And to answer the first part of your question, I think where the line is the legal standard, which I think is fairly clear, whether the defendant has done everything that they believe necessary to rob a bank.
And so walking up to the teller and saying, give me the money, is that it? Or
in most cases, that actually is what happens in bank robberies, and it is sufficient to rob the bank. And I do think, yes. I think an individual who walked into the bank, for example, in this case, Mr. Emmett walked into a first bank before he went into the next two. He looked around. There were lots of bars. There was lots of plexiglass. The tellers were very well shielded. It was the Royal Bank on the same block in the same neighborhood. He thought about it for a while, and he walked out. And he confessed to that, and surveillance photos indicate that did indeed happen. He was not charged with attempted bank robbery for that bank. That's the kind of behavior that would be an attempt that is not successful.
Why didn't you charge him? I mean, you could have charged him, I take it, on your theory for attempted bank robbery, and then he would have gotten the 2X1.1 downward departure.
I believe, actually, legally, that we could have, given his confession. Other evidence was simply not, the tellers didn't have any recollection of him. He didn't do anything else in that bank. There was no reason to, given the overwhelming evidence on the other two bank robberies. But my point is that abandonment is, I think, the kind of situation in which this should ordinarily apply if you're going to apply it in bank robbery.
Okay.
Thank you very much. We ask the court to affirm the conviction and sentence of Mr. Emmett.
Thank you. You have a little more time, Mr. Diamond Falk.
The issue, of course, that Ms. Griffin talked about is whether there's fear of death. And I think that neither teller, viewing the evidence as a whole, feared death. They may have feared some bodily harm, but they didn't fear death. With regard to the attempt, we have a situation where, given Mr. Emmett and given the factual circumstances, Mr. Emmett did not complete the offense. Didn't escalate his threats when he approached the tellers. He didn't move to physically do anything to the tellers. He didn't notify, he didn't emphasize the fact that he may have a weapon. He didn't do any of that. And what happened is he abandoned, as your Honor said.
But, of course, 2X1.1 does anticipate some situations where you don't actually complete all of the offense, and yet the downward adjustment should not take place.
It does. It does. And I guess that's why we're here.
Yeah, that's the question. whether that's your case or not is the issue,
And I thank Your Honors for the time. Thank you.
Well, we thank you very much. You were appointed, were you not?
Yes, I was.
And the court appreciates very much your willingness to take on the case.
Thank you.
Thank you as well.